You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Packernet Podcast. I am your host and resident fanalist, as always, Ryan Schlipp. Check us out online, packernet.com. Find me on Twitter, pack_daddy. So on today's episode of the Packernet Podcast, I have been going down a deep, dark hole in statistics, and this is actually kind of a bad time to do it, so I'm not going to go super deep. I'm kind of just playing with it because this is stuff that's probably going to be really helpful in the offseason, but it's still helpful now because we need to know stuff about the Packers and the Seahawks, and it's nice to take different looks other than, you know, obviously I've been very PFF-focused because after looking at a lot of stuff, I think it's my favorite way of... It's what I trust the most, but I've been doing a dive, especially because it's become a hot topic. It's popping up in the Facebook group a ton. And that's expected points added, which is a pretty cool thing. I think we have to recognize that, like everything, including PFF grades and stats and everything else, it's you got to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt. It's not, there is no perfect thing in football. I refuse to believe that there is. Maybe someday, and actually, if we can nerd out for a second, go a little Elon Musk here, I think there actually could be a time where we really kind of hone in on these things. And I think... Well, one of the things I want to talk about is a company called Sports Info Solutions. Actually, I didn't even realize they posted or got their data hub up. I've been a big fan of theirs for a very long time. Last year, I actually begged and pleaded for them to please hire me, but they said you had to move local, and I tried to negotiate with them and get them to find some kind of a position for me while I stayed in Madison, Wisconsin, and they weren't having it. But I am a very big believer in what they're doing, but I think if you take sort of the technology that they have, and you look at, for example, historical data, and you just throw all this junk at computers with one of the biggest developing technologies now, artificial intelligence, I think you're going to start to get some pretty cool stuff. And I think EPA, estimated points added, expected points added. See, it's a new thing. I got to get the kinks out here. But it's going to help us to develop kind of a better picture of things. It'll probably take a ton of the fun out of things like the draft, where we're all trying to scout things and we can all just have a computer tell us who's a good football player. That won't be so much fun, but, you know, once they get into the NFL, it'll be fun. Unless your goal is to be a scout someday, which, by the way, maybe think that over. But I want to kind of dig into a little bit of the stuff that they've done. I know Kona in the group had just posted something talking about some proprietary thing that they had come up with, and it's actually very, very cool because what they did, and I spent yesterday reading about their formula, is they take this EPA, but also what they have and what they do is they actually have software. It's similar to Pro Football Focus, but they have software that measures things like, you know, the how fast they're going, the distance from one player to another. They didn't divulge all this information, but I know that they have proprietary software that does measurement type things in a football game as a way of trying to determine good and bad, right? How much separation did that person get? And they got some really cool stuff. And apparently they just marry the two things. There's EPA, which is estimated points added, expected points added. I'm never going to get that, which is just a number. But the question is, who do we apply that to? Well, they use their software and they break down the plays and they say, well, this person did a good job, so they get the points. And they kind of use that and they apply those points to every single player on every single play to come up with a thing called points earned. And the reason that it was somewhat, well, I mean, it's interesting to me anyways because I'm doing sort of a deep dive into EPA and I'm a big fan of Sports Info Solutions. So when I found out that they're working together and they just suddenly made all their stuff public, which was not a thing a couple months ago. This is brand spanking new. If you look at sisdatahub.com, they have a lot of really, really in-depth statistics. And I wanted to buy a lot of this stuff, but it was way beyond what I was able to do. I mean, if I was making like full-time job money, maybe, but hugely expensive, way above what PFF is wanting. So the fact that they, again, released this publicly, not all of it, I mean, some of it is still behind a paywall, and I'll still consider that at some point, but a lot of this is all I wanted anyways. But anyways, they had Aaron Rodgers as essentially tied for the number one quarterback, which instantly and fairly enough, Dylan jumped in the comment section and said any system that has Rodgers as the top player, which I don't know if he's the top player, top quarterback, but any system that has him as a top quarterback has got to be a flawed system. That's fair, but I want to give him a chance because that is sort of a question. Let's just say, for example, let's just say, what if on these overthrows, we're looking at a quarterback that's expecting you to angle your route a little differently? That's going to put the ball in a different spot. Now, I know that doesn't account for everything, but if you can actually use technology in this kind of a way, and actually look at things like EPA, which really does give value to each and every play. Again, flawed system to some degree, but it's about as good as you're going to find. In other words, a completed pass is great, but how great was that completed pass? They're not all created equal. And so that's why I want to spend a lot more time learning about this. I'm still scratching the surface, but there is a lot of really interesting information here. And I also want to dig into the implications of another system saying that Aaron Rodgers, this is the first one that says he's the best quarterback in football. Maybe that needs to be calibrated a little bit, but it's pretty consistent in that Aaron Rodgers clearly is not being dogged as much analytically, I mean, as far as advanced analytics, as he is in the media. He's mediocre. Right? Somebody on Twitter just posted, I saw it this morning, some PFF guy, which obviously this isn't just a PFF stance. These are just individual PFF guys. Mike Renner is a big Packer fan. He thinks Aaron Rodgers is great. Whoever this guy was, I don't even know his name. He was dogging him. He's mediocre. He's not even better than Cousins. He went on the big fraud tirade, which I'm telling you, man, as we get closer, I'm starting to get a little heated. I'm. It's not even about the Seahawks anymore. And I almost feel bad for the Seahawks because of what I want the Packers to do to the Seahawks. I want them to beat and batter the Seahawks, not because of the Seahawks. They seem like nice people. Russell seems like a nice guy. But I want them beat so badly that everybody that has ever called the Packers frauds has to hide under a rock for the next week. I'm so absolutely tired of hearing it. Because it's getting to the point where it's beyond even an intellectual discussion. Right, we can have a talk about what it is to be a fraud, and I kind of did that already. Right, I used PFF's own flipping metrics and their grades to look at and say, yeah, they're about 2 wins higher than what you would expect based on their PFF grade. By the way, I think there was only one team, and I think it was the Bengals, that actually was at the grade that you would the record that you would expect. They were not the most fraudulent, and about half the league had more wins than you would expect. This narrative, man, this hive mind, as the kids apparently are calling it today, that's exactly what it is. Some people start saying it, and then it gets piled on by the likely, if you're a Vikings fan and you're doing it, that's what you're supposed to do. Bears and Lions fans, you can get away with not being a critical thinker in the name of just trying to annoy Packers fans. That's your job. Fine, I'll let it slide. But then you got national media people who just want to sound like one of the crew. Like, yeah, they're frauds, man. Compared to who? He actually said this is one of... See, now I'm gonna rant. I was supposed to just tell you what the show's about, take a break, and we move on. But now I'm upset because these people... I can't use bad words, but these people fill in the blank with your imagination. By the way, there's about 17 blanks there. Fill them all in, please. Turn in your assignment at the end of the day. Not publicly on Facebook, though. That's inappropriate. Just go somewhere and scream it for me. This dummy actually said this is one of the most fraudulent 13-3 teams you could ever construct. Really? I feel like I could construct a better one. Should we try? First of all, I'm going to take away Za'Darius Smith, the best pass rusher in all of football. That's number one, because that makes it hard for you to be a fraud. I also might take away the top 10 quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. And by the way, that's top 10 in your own frickin' metrics, dude. PFF, the company you work for, has Aaron Rodgers as the 9th best passer in all of football. So he's got to go. I don't know about this top 10 wide receiver in Davante Adams. Again, your metrics. Better than Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen by your own metrics. only four spots behind DeAndre Hopkins, ahead of A.J. Brown, another playoff team. Fifth best running back in all of football. By the way, the four running backs that are ahead of Aaron Jones are not in the playoffs. Nick Chubb, Josh Jacobs, Christian McCaffrey, Austin Eckler. Goodbye. The next best is Tony Pollard, not in the playoffs. Dalvin Cook, this freakish running back, greatest in all of football. Guess what? He's seventh. He's behind Aaron Jones. Again, these are your metrics, bruh. What are you going to do? You going to argue with me about this? Go ahead and quit your job and then tell me I'm stupid. How about David Bakhtiari as the second best pass-blocking offensive tackle in all of football, behind only Ronnie Stanley, ahead of Laremy Tunsil, Jason Peters, Teron Armstead, Jake Matthews, Andrew Whitworth. Are you getting the point? So I feel like if I'm going to construct a team that's terrible, I don't know that I have some of the best players in all of football. I don't know if I would do that if I were to construct a fraudulent 13-3 team. Brian Bulaga is the sixth best run-blocking tackle? That's weird. It almost sounds like I'm not describing a fraudulent team. This is so weird. Because everybody's telling me they're frauds. But I don't know. I'm just reading it, man. I'm just reporting the news. How about Elgton Jenkins and Billy Turner being 17th and 18th in run-blocking? There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, they've got a pretty good offensive line. Which also seems weird. Because they're frauds. It almost, to me, sounds like what you're talking about is a team that kind of struggles to have a number two wide receiver and a tight end. And somehow that makes them frauds. It's so weird that somebody would say that. When you got the third best pass rushing interior defender in all of football, and by the way, he didn't even start getting hot until halfway point, and this is his year-long grade, meaning he is by far right now the best pass rushing interior defender in football. So weird that you would construct a fraudulent team this way. I don't think I would. Za'Darius Smith is graded as the third best pass rusher overall, or I should say edge rusher overall on defense. Number one in pressures, he passed Daniil Hunter, who, by the way, there was a point in this year where Daniil Hunter was essentially not even catchable. Daniil Hunter right now has 88 pressures. Za'Darius has 93. He is five pressures ahead of the guy in second place. How about a team in which the two top pass rushers have 16 and 13 sacks? Again, I'm not sure if I'm going to construct the worst, most fraudulent 13-3 team that this is how I would go about it. With a great offensive line, a top 10 quarterback, a top 5 running back, a top 10 wide receiver, one of the best tackles in all of football, one of the best interior defenders in football, probably the best pass rush duo in football, one of the best. We haven't talked about corners yet. We haven't talked about safeties yet. I'm just going down the line describing what your website says about the Green Bay Packers. While you continue on trying to sound cool with your anti-Packers hive mind BS, because rather than actually doing homework and looking at what the Packers are, you watch a couple football games, see that there was a close game against the Lions because you don't realize this team plays up and down to competition, and want to use the Lions as the benchmark as opposed to the Vikings games as a benchmark, in which the team that you think is not fraudulent got absolutely stomped out and made to look stupid for the second time this year. That's how your brain works, apparently. That's what you want to do, rather than digging in to your own website statistics, of which you have more information than I do. You've got even more in-depth analytics than I do on this stuff. But why do the work? I can just regurgitate what people outside of our website are saying. I want to be a little mini Colin Cowherd here on the PFF Network, or whatever nonsense little program that was. Would you like me to continue? Because I got a little more. I mean, we're pretty much through the whole team, but Tremont Williams is the sixth best corner in all of football as far as coverage grades go. Number six overall. Would you like to know the first five? Richard Sherman, Quentin Dunbar, Stephon Gilmore, Marcus Peters, Casey Hayward, Tremont Williams. My goodness. Sounds like some pretty elite company. By the way, Jair is only 13th. So we've got a number six and a number 13 overall. That ain't bad. In fact, I don't know where bad is. Adrian Amos is top 20 overall on defense. Chandon Sullivan is top 32. That would be two starting safeties right there. Amos is fourth overall as a tackler. Maybe not the most important thing, but if you're looking for a playoff team to be fundamentally sound, having a safety that's locking everything up in front of them, it's not the worst thing in the world to have. And by the way, this is just your site. I got much better information from Sports Info Solutions and their perspective on things. For example, Aaron Rodgers tied for number one. you want to disregard that, that's fine. I can go on down the line. And by the way, they're using statistics and play-by-play breakdowns with machine learning built in, kind of similar to what you're doing outside of the whole eye test thing. Point is that the narrative is dumb. So what if they struggle? This is a good football team. Nobody can look at this roster and say it's a badly constructed football team. Well, they got a good quarterback. They got a good wide receiver. They got a good offensive line. They have a very good running back. They got a great pass rush duo. They've got a great interior pass rusher. Probably one of the best pass rush teams when you consider Kenny Clark, Preston Smith, and Za'Darius Smith in football. They've got a great trio of corners and a couple good safeties. A little bit struggling at linebacker, tight end, and depth at wide receiver. But outside of that, you know, pretty solid. In what universe does that make you a fraud? Compared to who? I'm sorry, who is the Saints' number two wide receiver? Exactly. Nobody. But you know what it all comes down to? The Baltimore Ravens and the Saints and a lot of these teams, they win games sometimes. When they go up against bad teams, they win by 30. That's the only metric. And this is when I get most upset, is when people just are simplistic. And they're so adamant in their simplicity. This is why I went off on the coaching hire nonsense. This guy should have been hired. What the heck do you know about this? You know nothing about this guy. You know nothing about what that team is looking for. You know absolutely nothing. Go ahead and look into Bieniemy's track record with the law and tell me you know anything about Bieniemy. You know nothing about any of these candidates. You know nothing about any of these teams, what they're looking for, what any of these guys can do in terms of leadership, and essentially what a coach is, much more than X's and O's, is a CEO. Teams are looking for a CEO. You go ahead right now and make me a list of the head coaches in ranking as far as who would be the best CEO for your franchise. You don't know where to start. So shut your mouth. You go flapping your gums on Twitter like you know something. You don't know anything. People that are so adamantly stupid drive me nuts. If you don't know, that's fine. Keep your mouth shut. It's okay to say, I don't know. And then in their ignorance to literally blame people of being some of the worst human beings on earth. Because my brain can't figure out what's going on, I'm just going to call people evil. Literally go on Twitter and Facebook and call people evil. Get a life. I'm going to go on my show and call the Packers frauds. I have nothing to back that up whatsoever. Zero to back that up. But I'm just going to throw it out there. I'm ready, man. I need football. I need Za'Darius to hit somebody really, really, really hard. Anyways, I think 17 minutes in is a good place to take a break as any. This had nothing to do with what I was supposed to talk about today. This is what happens when you wake up and go on Twitter. I should just go downstairs, make some eggs, get my giant cup of coffee, listen to some, like, Enigma or Deep Forest or something, and just kind of zone out and be happy. Light some incense, center my chi, whatever it is, and do the show. Let's take a break and see if we can actually get to my notes today. If you're like me and you're about to go on a rampage, maybe you need a vacation. Because you do. Because I do. We both do. We can go together. This spring, follow your favorite baseball team to Arizona for Cactus League spring training. Great weather, great scenery, great outdoor adventures, amazing food, and it is the home base for baseball fans. If you're a baseball fan, you get to go out to 10 different stadiums where 15 different baseball teams are out practicing in 75-degree weather. All 10 of these stadiums are within 50 miles of the greater Phoenix area, so you can hit all of them. Not that you would need to if you're a fan of the Brewers or whatever, you just go hang out with the Brewers, I guess. But you get to meet players, you get to get autographs before games. It's just a lot of fun. So plan your spring training getaway at visitarizona.com/springtraining. Let me try that one more time. visitarizona.com/springtraining. And as we get into this cold stretch in winter, it's just now starting to hit. Make sure you're gearing up with some great winter clothing. Because Mack Weldon has got some of the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants, and more that you'll ever wear. And if you're like me, the only thing that matters is comfort and easy shopping, and Mack Weldon takes care of both. Even if you're Kona and you're living out in Hawaii, it still would be worth your while to check this out and get some super comfortable, breathable clothing. Especially you out in Hawaii. Why don't you invite me to Hawaii? It's not fair. But hey, gotta get that breathable material, man. It's gonna feel good. And I can attest to it. Like I said, I bought some of the stuff. You probably don't want to get a winter coat or a hoodie like I did, but get you one of these t-shirts. Because again, it's one of those things, even if, you know, you're not into buying super fancy stuff, you got to get yourself at least one item. Just because you deserve it. you owe it to yourself to have something nice in your closet somewhere. And if your whole closet is nice stuff, then yeah, just go to Mack Weldon and get a bunch of their stuff. And as a bonus for listening to the podcast, Mack Weldon has a great offer for you to take advantage of. 20% off your first order. Just visit MackWeldon.com, enter promo code OVERTIME. Again, 20% off your first order. Just enter promo code OVERTIME when you visit MackWeldon.com. And they want you to be comfortable. So if you don't like your first pair of underwear, you get to keep it, and they'll still refund you. No questions asked. MackWeldon.com. Use promo code OVERTIME for 20% off your first order. I'm getting good at that whole speed talking thing. I might have a career in that. I don't know if that's... Is that even a thing anymore? Nobody really even watches TV, but I don't know. I'll look into it. I'll let you know. Speed talking voiceover work. Anyways, let's kind of pick up where we left off sort of a long time ago. The interesting point in all of this, regardless, because I'm sure SIS, Sports Info Solutions, has some tweaking to do. This is kind of a newer thing that they're working on. I tend to agree that if Aaron Rodgers and Dak Prescott are tied at number one, you've got a little bit of work to do. And understand, they clearly have Lamar as the greatest runner at quarterback, and it's really not even close. And they do break it down by passing and running and all those kinds of things, which, by the way, at some point I'll probably save it for Saturday, but let me just put it this way. As I've been doing more of these deep dives into things, this might be one of the most historic... What should I say? What Lamar Jackson is doing, it's depending on how much you want to put stock in some of these metrics, might be the most historic efforts ever. And I'll get more in depth on what I'm talking about, but I looked at something historically. They basically ranked best player, you know, sort of their MVP, using a similar metric. I think it is expected points added. I'm not sure. But Lamar Jackson essentially is the number one player this year, kind of ever. So I'm kind of upset that I haven't been watching the Ravens. I heard about how good he was, and I knew I was saying when he came out, I don't think he's going to be good because it's very difficult for a quarterback to be a mobile quarterback. It's just hard because in my mind, you know, being a quarterback takes 100% of your brain power. You can't segment it and then be an elite running back there and an elite quarterback at the same time. It's really difficult to do. However, as I said, if he can, there's no real limit as far as what this guy can do. And apparently, according to some of these metrics, this is maybe one of the best things that has ever happened in football, and I'm just kind of blown away. I just figure he's another Pat Mahomes. He's having a great year. It'll probably regress. We'll see how it goes. And maybe it will, but still, it's like, man, this is like a historic thing that I just completely missed. I'm going to have to go on Game Pass and go back and watch this guy. Anyways, we'll save that for, I think they play Saturday. I don't know, Saturday or Sunday. But here's the thing. Regardless of how much calibration this and PFF and Football Outsiders and all these things need, there seems to be a theme. Regardless of proportion, there is clearly Aaron Rodgers, who is, you know, again, PFF has him top 10. Out of all quarterbacks in the NFL, top 10. Despite what appears to be a terrible passing offense, they have him top 10 when they break down every single play, every single pass, every single everything. SIS, just rolling this thing out. They probably got some tweaks, but still, number one. Football Outsiders has Aaron Rodgers eighth, right? Ahead of Tannehill, ahead of Garoppolo, ahead of Watson, ahead of Brady and Wentz and Goff and Rivers and Matt Ryan. I mean, you know, there's seven quarterbacks ahead of him. And by the way, they also have Dak Prescott number one, although Football Outsiders uses SIS's data in their stuff, so there's going to be a little bit of overlap there, but they use different ways of measuring things, right? They have DVOA and DYAR, which I guess there's some overlap there too, because I think they use expected points also, but whatever. Point is, these are different ways. All three of these are taking similar information. I mean, at the end of the day, you're watching the same plays, and all three are breaking it down differently. And they're all coming to the conclusion, at the very least, that Rodgers is top 10. PFF has him ninth, Football Outsiders has him eighth, SIS has him number one, tied for first. That is weird for a fan base, and understand, and I understand there's a lot of Packer fans who say Aaron Rodgers needs to go. Maybe all of these things are wrong. Maybe we're right. And by we, I just mean when we watch it and we see an overthrow and we get mad at Rodgers, come on, throw the ball better. Maybe we're right about it. And maybe he's just really struggling. Maybe he's heading downhill. I don't know, but I think we should take this somewhat seriously. That three different places are using advanced analytics and watching. I don't think Football Outsiders necessarily watches every single play. However, the data they're using is on a play-to-play basis, which I guess I didn't realize beforehand, but again, they aggregate from SIS, which is a play-to-play thing. They break down every single play. And they're all just doing their best to take this massive pile of data and say, what do we do? And they're all coming to this conclusion. As a contrast, however, looking at wide receiver. Now, PFF still has Devontae top 10. However, if you look at the second half of the year, I don't think he's even top. He's maybe top 32. It's been a struggle. I mean, well, the last couple games, he's had like 50,000 catches. Which, by the way, let me pause for a second. Let's think about this also. Now, let me complete my thought. It'll make more sense going in the proper order. Football Outsiders has Devontae Adams over the course of the year 32nd. In other words, barely a starting wide receiver. They have him 43rd in DVOA. DVOA is sort of a per play, like on a play-to-play basis, how he's doing. So DVOA, or Football Outsiders, not impressed with Devontae at all. And that's our number one guy. Number two, Alan Lazard, they have him 37th. And DVOA, they have him 18th. So depending on how you break this down and how much you love DVOA, he's kind of our number one right now. And I do believe they're using, it doesn't say it, so maybe they don't. Maybe it's just for the teams. But I know that they look at things more toward the end of the season, which would make sense for why Devontae is lower and Alan Lazard is higher. And by the way, PFF would actually agree with this assessment if you look at the second half of the year. So I'm guessing that's what they're doing because they always kind of do that. They adjust for recency. After that, they have Marquez in the 70s, Geronimo Allison 70s and 80s. So if you were to ask Football Outsiders, where's the talent in the passing game between quarterback, wide receiver, and where's the deficiency? It's not even close. Aaron Rodgers is the talent. The wide receivers are the deficiency, including Devontae Adams. And this isn't necessarily saying Devontae's bad, but he's been not himself. Because, again, all of these sites, if you go back to last year, Devontae's borderline top five. And all of them simultaneously are watching Devontae in the second half of the year going, this isn't great. SIS, who has this total points thing, which is looking at EPA and then all the other metrics that they have Devontae, I don't even know because it's not numbered, if I'll count it, 42nd. And there are no other Packers on this page, so it must be out of 50. By the way, this is wide receiver and tight end. They have Jimmy Graham next. If that's out of 50, this is probably like 60th, 65th would be Jimmy Graham. By the way, there's nobody else in the top 100 that is a Green Bay Packer. On the third sheet, they have Alan Lazard at 103rd. They have Marquez at 111th. And about 15 spots behind that, they have Mercedes Lewis. On the next page, which now I believe we're in the 200s, at the bottom of this list, Jay Kumerow, Robert Tonyan. And then on the final page, and this is the seventh page. So let's see, the sixth page would be 300th. Seventh page is from 300 to 350. Geronimo is halfway down that list with negative points, which is unbelievable. There are only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, about 18 people, only about 18 out of roughly 350 that have a negative overall contribution. In other words, when they're on the field, they're more harm than good. Only about 17. There's a bunch that are zeros, but about 17, and Geronimo is one of them. The only other one was Darius Shepherd. He was a negative 3. Dante Moncrief, by the way, is a negative 7. It's just ridiculous. Trevor Davis, by the way, he was really bad for the Packers. I skipped over him. Trevor Davis is on this side for the Raiders, so both with the Packers and the Raiders, he was really horrible, but worse with the Raiders as a wide receiver, which maybe goes to why he's gone, because he's just such an abomination as a wide receiver. Good kick returner, though. So again, the point is, and I'm trying to get excited about it, because at the end of the day, this is a zero-sum game. And a lot of Packer fans, again, the positivity people don't like thinking this way, but this is just how it works. It is a zero-sum game, and what I mean by that is we have the passing game, right, which is struggling. That is a reality. It's not doing as well as we'd like it to do. And we can sit here and talk about, statistically, blah, 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 blah. They're 17th in yards. It's not that bad. Okay, great, whatever, don't care. There's an issue. An Aaron Rodgers-led offense with a great offensive line and a run game for the first time ever is barely mediocre, and we can watch it and see the problems. We can watch it and see the stagnation and the missed throws and all that stuff. The point of going over all this is to say that if we're going to say that things are struggling, the better Aaron Rodgers is, the worse that is for the wide receivers. Conversely, the better we say the wide receivers are, the worse we're inherently saying Aaron Rodgers is. Again, a lot of the positivity crowd want to be able to say, no, Aaron Rodgers is good and the wide receivers are good, but you can't say that. Because on a basic logical level, if Aaron Rodgers is good and the wide receivers are good, then the offense should be pretty good. a good quarterback with good wide receivers are going to be able to connect. They can't connect, so there's something wrong with that. So we have to sort of, I mean, we can balance it however we want. We can say, well, they're both kind of bad, or they're both struggling a little bit, and there you go. I mean, if you want to be diplomatic, however you want to fan is fine. I'm just trying to look at information. Because, listen, when I watch the game, I'm mad at Aaron Rodgers. I'm just saying, as a guy that's saying, what's wrong with Aaron Rodgers, I come to PFF, I come to SIS, I come to Football Outsiders, these places where they have all this information, every single play, trying to break it down, trying to make sense of it. All of them are impressed with Aaron Rodgers, maybe not elite 2011 Aaron Rodgers, but they all say he's top 10. But yet, if you look at the wide receivers, including Devontae, it's been ugly. And Devontae's been like the go-to. He's the only guy, and it's so bad for all the other wide receivers. Devontae's getting 19 catches in a game. It's absurd. And here's the other point that I was going to say that I decided to wait on. Think about this for a minute. Do we think it is entirely a coincidence that when he throws to Aaron Rodgers, most of the time it's a completion? When he throws to Marquez, 99% of the time it's an overthrow. Is it a coincidence that when he throws to Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams, 95% of the time it's caught? When he throws to Danny Vitale, zero times it gets caught. It's always overthrown. There are just seems to be certain players that there's not a connection with. And we can sit here and say maybe Aaron Rodgers is to blame for that. But again, certain wide receivers, Alan Lazard, there doesn't seem to be a problem. Devontae, there doesn't seem to be a problem. Sometimes there is. But that quote-unquote connection seems to be there. And if we look at what a lot of people have referenced, myself included, the fact that it's hard to know exactly what the wide receiver and quarterback's responsibilities are, even on what are seemingly simple routes and play calls, where that wide receiver should be and when isn't something that we are privy to. We don't know that information inherently. So again, I'm just trying to pick apart this information. They tend to believe Aaron Rodgers is doing well. Maybe they're all wrong. Maybe they're all using the same wrong information, or they have the same wrong biases, right? Basic computer stuff, garbage in, garbage out. It's possible. But again, all the information points in one direction, and the reason I'm excited, and I understand we still got the playoffs, but I am 100,000% certain that Brian Gutekunst is going to attack this offense with the same kind of aggression that he did the defense last year. Now, maybe he doesn't have the same amount of resources, so we don't get as many big splash plays, and we don't have 2 first-round picks, so, okay, maybe he can't do it to the same degree. But his goal is to destroy this offense and rebuild it back up. And again, look at what Mike McCarthy had said. Allegedly, according to Ian Rappaport, who I think is a reliable source, Mike McCarthy was frustrated that he wasn't getting help. Do you actually think that the help he wanted was a new quarterback? Of course not! Mike McCarthy was looking at it going, dude, I don't have any tight ends. I don't have any wide receivers. I got a good offensive line. I mean, granted, my right guard is basically a giant hole, but we could make that work. A lot of teams have bad offensive line. I mean, the Texans have like one good lineman and nothing. Seattle Seahawks have one good lineman and nothing. The Vikings line is getting a little bit better, but there's still a lot of holes there. We can make this work, but I gotta have a weapon somewhere on offense. And if all a team has to do, which has been the case for a while now, is double Devontae and we lose, that's problematic. And I don't want to be a team that has to run the ball 30 times in a hope of winning, because that's the only thing we can do and win. That's not how you should be able to win in football. Well, I'm not going to do that. I mean, yeah, maybe Mike McCarthy should have pushed Aaron Rodgers to, you know, 18 to 20 carries instead of 10 to 12. Fine. But again, that's still not an offense. If all we can do is run the ball, all I can do is run this running back who's a smaller guy with an injury history into the ground so that we assuredly won't have him in the playoffs, but hey, at least we win a couple more games in the regular season and ruin his career in the meantime, fine, maybe we could do that. But the guy's just mad. I'm not getting guys. Aaron Rodgers mad. I'm not getting guys. And we look at the fact that we've got, what, 5th round, 6th round, 7th round undrafted free agent wide receivers making up the massive bulk of our wide receivers, and our tight ends are like 33-year-old guys, a rookie, and an undrafted free agent who can't do very much. Jimmy Graham, who is way over the hill. Mercedes Lewis, who's a great blocker but offers nothing in the receiving game. Jay Sternberger, who can't even get on the field. Robert Tonyan, who can't even get on the field. We don't have any weapons in the passing game. A fullback who can run fast, but that connection isn't there. Marquez, who can run fast, but the connection isn't there. Kumerow, who's a good route runner, but apparently just, I don't know what he's doing wrong, but he's not doing a good job. He does once in a while, like one or two times a year, which is great, and then he pops up and everyone freaks out about, yeah, he's going to be the next Thielen, and then he disappears for the rest of the year. I appreciate that one game. Geronimo has completely fallen off the map. He used to at least be consistent. He is now literally, in 2019, one of the worst wide receivers in football. He was given a one-year contract this year. It will not be renewed. He's gone. And I really wouldn't be surprised if there was a massive house cleaning after this, especially in terms of wide receivers. We have stacked a pile of essentially undrafted free agent talent type wide receivers. And I know Packer fans get excited, right? We get excited because there are guys. And you don't understand, Marquez is a legit scary guy. No, there's a reason he was drafted where he was drafted. You don't get guys that tall and that fast that go that late in the draft unless there are serious problems. He's served a purpose. He's done fairly well in certain situations, but that is broken. Geronimo is broken. Right now, we've got Devontae and Alan Lazard, and that's cool. But I'm telling you right now, even Alan Lazard isn't quite, I don't know. I mean, I can't say anything now because, again, second half of the year, he's been awesome. But also second half of the year, Devontae has been borderline at the level of Lazard or below. So to say that there can't be some things that maybe are happening now that won't happen over the long term is almost a certainty because we know Devontae's better than what he has been. So I'm still kind of biding my time with Lazard, although he's been good ever since we've been giving him an opportunity. So I'm willing, because it does happen sometimes, but we got to also understand if a guy's a late-round guy, it's for a reason. If he's an undrafted guy, it's for a reason. And so if I have some doubt in these guys, it's for a reason. There's a difference between saying, I'm going to trust Devontae's going to turn this around and saying, I'm going to trust Marquez is going to turn this around. Because people want to use that argument all the time. Oh, you probably said Devontae wasn't any good either. You're right, I did. I said he wasn't very good, then he was a bust, and this is frustrating, because he was at the time. And I had given up, and I was wrong, because he turned it around, and that's awesome, and good for you for sticking with him. The problem is, you stick with everybody, and a broken clock is right twice a day. And that's essentially what you are, is a broken clock. He's going to be great, he's going to be great, he's going to be great, he's going to be great. Danny Vitale is going to be great, Marquez is going to be great, Equanimeous is going to be great, Alan Lazard is going to be great, Kumerow is going to be great. You say this about literally every wide receiver, and if one of them is great, you throw a parade for yourself, despite the fact you're wrong 9 out of 10 times. And then shame all other Packer fans because they didn't see it like you saw it. The great wizard of NFL breakdowns. Should start a YouTube channel and be a billionaire or something. The larger point that I guess I'm getting at, which I've already said, but let's just summarize this, is that as much as I internally don't seem to want to believe it, because my eyes are telling me differently, I think we need to acknowledge there's a very real chance that Aaron Rodgers is still a very good, very dangerous, very scary quarterback, and if we can legitimately get him even one more wide receiver that is a legit wide receiver and an actual legit threat at tight end, there's really no reason that this offense can't be an elite offense. And I'm not going to say best in the NFL considering what I'm watching over in Baltimore right now. If that continues, having that as your standard of maybe we can be better than that is ridiculous because it's possible that there hasn't been an offense better than that. And again, we'll get into some of those details at another time. Man, I got to nothing that I wanted to talk about today. This was the latest added note that I had yesterday, and all the other ones that I've been pushing off got pushed off again. But since we didn't take our second break, I guess we'll have to run over a little bit, and I'll be a little bit late, but whatever. Let's take a break and talk about one other thing really quickly, and then that'll be it.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
All right, so it's kind of funny because we talk about all these super advanced analytical type things, but it's funny because one of the things that I do on a week-to-week basis is look for correlations, right? You know, at what point does a team win? At what point does a team lose? The funny thing is, the other thing that I did was the quarterback and defense, offense, defense, kind of when does a team win a Super Bowl thing, right? It shouldn't be all that surprising, but it's kind of funny how simplistic it is, how much you can tell about a team just based on points. Points scored, points allowed. It tells you the whole story. For example, let's look at Carolina real quick. All these in-depth stats. We'll just look at points and let's see if we can draw some conclusions. Ready? The Carolina Panthers, what is their record? They are 5-11. Their record is 5-2 when their defense allowed 27 or less points. They lost every single game in which a team scored 29 or more points. Do you know how many teams that would apply to? This is the funny thing. Some of these rules are basically standardized, and you can apply this rule to the Packers, you can apply this rule to the Patriots, you can apply this rule to pretty much any team. There's probably several teams in the NFL where you could say anybody that scored 29 points or more beat you. The difference between the Panthers and a lot of other teams is the Panthers' defense allowed 29 or more points, 9 times. Redskins, 29. Falcons, 29. Seahawks, 30. Rams, 30. Saints, 34. Colts, 38. Falcons, 40. Saints, 42. 49ers, 51. What can we say about this team? What did we just learn about this team by looking at one thing? I didn't know how horrible this defense is at stopping points. I mean, how bad the defense is overall. I didn't realize the defense was that bad. Only once did they keep a team to under 20 points, and that was against the Texans. And of course, they won that game. Only one time did their defense keep a team under 20. What would the Packers' record be if the defense did the exact same thing? Probably be worse than the Panthers. And as a result, and this is the funny thing too, because there's always a combination or some kind of a relationship between points against and points for. As a result, we can look at the offensive correlation and see something that's entirely unfair. Every single game with the exception of one where the offense didn't score 30 points or more, they lost. Seriously, they're 4-1 when they scored 30 or more points, and they scored 30 or more points 5 times. They were 1-10 when they didn't get to 30 points. That's how bad their defense was. Just looking at points, that's the picture of the Panthers. That's it. Because really, at the end of the day, it always comes down to points. Let's continue, because this is funny. And it's especially prominent on the edges. Let's look at some of the teams with the best defenses. The New England Patriots, it's stunning. Did you know the 12-4 New England Patriots, right? Pretty dominant season, all that stuff, super great, right? They lost. Do you know what their, let's put it this way. Do you know what their record was when a team reached 20 points? 0-5, including this last wild card game. They were 0-5 when a team reached 20 points. What does that tell you? It tells me two things. Number one, unbelievably dominant defense that a team that cannot win unless you keep them under 20 went 12-4, technically 12-5. That's incredible. Here are the scores of the opponents when the team won. Ready? 17-14, 14-14, 13-13, 10-10, 9-7, 3-0-0. Two shutouts. Unbelievable defense. But the offense was terrible. Granted, they had a couple big games, especially early on in the year, but that's the story. That is the story of this team. Either the defense keeps you under 20 or you lose. That's the story of a team that does not have an offense. And it shows, right? They don't have wide receivers. They don't have a tight end anymore. Their quarterback is in regression. They don't have anything. They're entirely reliant on their defense. And the last one, and this is exactly why the Baltimore Ravens are so unbelievably dominant and why it's going to be nearly impossible to stop them on their path to the Super Bowl. Number one, and there's such a huge gap here, you can kind of say it any way you want, but I'll say it in the most dramatic sense. When the Baltimore Ravens have allowed a team to score 33 or more points, they're 0-2. Anything under that, they're undefeated. Another way to say this, again, because there's a massive gap between their second and third highest points allowed, is when the team was kept 23 points or lower, they're undefeated. Which, again, that's both of those statements are probably true of most teams. Most teams probably have nothing but losses beyond 33 points. Several teams, Patriots not included, if you can't get past 23, there's probably mostly wins there. The biggest story here, though, is the fact that there are 14 games in which teams couldn't get past 23. Here's the other part, though. It's not just the defense. This is what makes Baltimore so unique, right? For the Patriots, it's all defense. It's not just defense for the Baltimore Ravens. It is defense. The fact that, let's start from the bottom. 6, 7, 10, 10, 13, 15, 16, 17, 17, 17, 17, 20, 21, 23. Then 33-40. There were two really crazy games. They happened, by the way, in week 3 and 4. So week 4 was the last time anyone even crossed 23 points. That, by the way, happened in week 5. So since week 5, nobody's crossed 21 points. That's unbelievable. That's just the defense, though. Let's look at the offense, which maybe is even more remarkable, which, according to their statistics, it is. They have the number one scoring offense, number two in yards, number three in points against on defense, number four in yards on defense. This offense has never once scored less than 20 points. Never once. That is the lowest score they've had all year, 20 points. The highest, 59 points. So this is what makes them so dangerous. And I promise you this has a point, but this is just to kind of prove how much we can learn just by looking at points for and points against. But it's also extremely interesting, and I want to talk about it. Actually, you know what? Maybe I'll just leave it at that, because I want to talk about Baltimore and how incredible they are before their game. So I guess the question is, what is the story of the Seattle Seahawks and the Green Bay Packers? Because every team has a story looking at their points. Interestingly enough, both teams are undefeated when the defense allows no more than 24 points. I've been saying all year, 24 is a magic number for the Packers. It's also the magic number for the Seahawks. The biggest difference, however, is that the Seattle defense has allowed teams to 24 points or beyond 24 points a lot more often. So really, what the bar is in terms of what we can allow before we start losing is dependent on the offense, and vice versa, right? The offense, where that line is dependent on the defense. So the offense says, if you hold them to 24, we'll win. That's true for the Seattle Seahawks. It's true for the Green Bay Packers. 24 is the magic number to keep an eye on in this game. The point is, what defense is most likely to keep a team to 24 and give the offense the opportunity to win the game? It's the Packers' defense. The Seattle defense has only done it 7 times. 7 of their 11 wins came from the defense holding their end of the bargain. Every single one of the Packers' 13 wins came because the defense held them to 24 points. Every single game in which they went over 24, the offense lost the game. 26 against the Chargers, we scored 11. 34 from the Eagles, we scored 27. 37 from the 49ers, we scored 8. So it's much more dire if we get beyond 24. So that also tells another story, right? If the defense fails, what offense is most likely to reach up and still win to overcome that? The Packers have never done it. Granted, they've only had 3 opportunities, so it's a little bit unfair, but the Seattle Seahawks have 5 wins, including, by the way, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, in which the defense allowed 34 points, which is the most their defense allowed all year. The offense won in overtime, scoring 40 points. This is a big part of the narrative of this game, the point breakdowns. Now, looking at it from the opposite point, where is that line in which the team tends to win almost all the time? You can draw kind of 2 lines, 27 or 28. It's in that range, 27. They are 9-1 at 28. They're 6-0. So depending on what side of that L you want to go on, either way, 27-28 is where the offense says, or essentially if what the defense is saying is, if you can do 27 or more, we're going to win this game. That's the line the defense creates. And the fact of the matter is the offense has done a good job of getting over that line. That's where most of their wins come, which tells me most of their wins come from their offense. Not their defense, right? The defense's end of the bargain is keep them below 24. That's what the offense is asking, and the defense very rarely does it. The defense says, hey, if you can go over 27, we'll do the rest. The offense does all hold up that end of the bargain. 10 times they've gone over 27. And by the way, we could even make this lower. If we want to go behind one other L, they are 12-2 when they've scored 17 points or more, which obviously they've been able to do most of the time. But again, this is what it's telling me. The offense is pulling this. Where's the line for the Packers? 20 points. Why? Because the Packers' defense holds such a low bar for the offense, is saying, hey, look, if you get to 20, we're going to have a real good shot at winning this. What is their record? They are 12-1 when they've got to 20 points. They're 1-2 when they did not get to 20 points. So again, the defense is the story for the Packers. The offense is the story for Seattle, which is so funny because, and we've been hearing people say this, that it's kind of a reverse thing. This is telling you the story of the game. The defense has to pull its weight in this game if the Packers are going to win, because that's ultimately what has gotten this team wins. It is the defense keeping points low, keeping that bar low. Right, think about, so weird, I don't know how these analogies come up into my head, weird little things firing in my brain, but you know how wrestlers, when they come into the ring, some of the super tall guys, you know, the Undertaker or whatever, they just swing their leg over because they're 7'8", but then you get some of the smaller guys and you have to have people, like, maybe lift up the top one and push down the middle one so that they can sneak in. The offense and the defense holds these things at a certain point. And the question is, can the offense or defense meet that line? The defense has been holding this very, very, very low for the offense to get over, right? The offense essentially is a little short guy. And again, a lot of pro Packers fans, which we all are, but, you know, the positivity, our offense is elite, blah, 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 don't want to hear this, but the defense has essentially been holding this very, very low for the offense, giving them a very low bar to step over. Or another way, if we want to do the reverse analogy, the limbo bar, they've been holding it basically right at forehead level, and the offense just kind of has to tip its head back. You can probably tell by the inflection of my voice that I did put my head back. I still don't think I made it under the imaginary bar that I put. Anyways, likewise for the Seattle Seahawks, the offense is holding the bar high or low, depending on which analogy you prefer, for the defense, so that, you know, they just kind of have to keep it around 24-ish, or even a little bit higher, because, you know, ideally, if you can keep, in other words, if you can keep it at 24, we're going to win. If you slip up and let them up to 27, 28, we still got a shot, but, you know, try to keep them at 24, because then I can guarantee you victory, because, again, the Seahawks are going to get 27. That's kind of their thing. Like, we'll get 27. Just don't let them get past 24, and we should be fine. So, again, it's funny because we do all this advanced analytics, but the real story of the team, I feel like a great encapsulation of what a team is can be seen in points for and points against. You can learn everything you need to know about the Patriots, the Panthers, the Packers, the Seahawks in a macro sense just by looking at points, because that's what this comes down to. That's why there's such a strong correlation between points for and points against, especially defensive points, when trying to decide who's going to win a Super Bowl. Or at least telling you who's not going to win. I know I said the Patriots had the best shot because of their defense, which is true, but they also had a really terrible offense, which is problematic. But, you know, you look at the Baltimore Ravens, all roads lead to Baltimore. And we're going to need that 2020 regression to start just a smidge early if we're going to have a shot at this thing. Because I'm telling you, this is a pretty historic run. Maybe not super overall. I mean, the fact that they're, like, top five in every single category, points and yard, you know, macro points and yard, but also Lamar having arguably one of the best rookie seasons, one of the best overall seasons ever from any player. Again, this is a certain metric. We'll talk more about it at the time, when the time comes. Pretty incredible. But yeah, that I think that is the story. It is the Packers defense versus the Seattle Seahawks offense. So anyways, I really got to get going. You folks have yourselves the best day of your life. I don't know how, I'll figure it out and just make sure today is that particular day, and I will talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one. Bye-bye.